Again, it's great to be here. Lovely to see many people that I've seen before. And like I said, new people. So happy to be here. And tonight, my talk is going to be really understanding the interplay of karma, choice, and mental factors. And so I wanted to start with a quote from Ajahn Chah. The mind and mental factors do exist as part of reality. They truly exist in conventional reality. But the Buddha taught that once you know them, let them go, because the mind and mental factors are the very things which lead you to both that which is wrong and that which is right in life. If you are wise, they can lead you to that which is right. If you are foolish, they lead you to that which is wrong. The mind and mental factors are the world. The Buddha used the things of the world to observe the world. Having observed the way things are, he came to know the world and described himself as being the one who clearly knows the world. So, karma, of course, as many of you know, is action in Buddhism, and it is driven by our intentions. And yet, we might always think if our intentions are good, and then our actions will follow. But our intentions are often under the influence of strong conditioning, in particular by the three poisons of greed, ignorance, and delusions. And we sometimes may not have as much choice as we think. And that's a big place of where our practice really goes, is when we begin to bring our awareness to those places in which we find that we're swept away, right? Swept away by the karmic conditions of our mind. And so there was an interesting article that I read, I guess this was probably last year, and it was a man, a Stanford University neurology and biology professor, and he studied the brain for like 40 years, and he concluded that our self-conception as individuals and species is based on a myth. He said we have no free will at all. But I will say, I don't necessarily agree with him 100%. But what he was really talking about is when we hold people morally responsible for many of their actions, we're not looking at the underlying conditions of their lives. And he was basically speaking about justice and injustice. You know, if we're born into privilege, stable home environment, we get an education, we're more likely to thrive and maintain our privilege. And this is statistically true. And if we're born into very difficult circumstances, unstable, abusive home, economic marginalization, it's hard to escape. So there's certainly these conditions that come into the way people are born, the way people come into life. And it's really hard to move out of that. And of course, there's always exceptions. And so that's where I disagree with him. I don't think of this as being like a fixed situation, but I think there's truth there. And the other side is some people will say we always have a choice. And that completely overlooks the point where we are driven by condition. In other words, it's going too far to the other end of the spectrum, and it can lead to a form of blame and lack of compassion. Well, you always had a choice. You always had a choice. There's kind of a blame that comes in. And so in Buddhism, we cultivate the ability to choose our response internally and externally. And so we really have to work with this. You know, this is part of our practice, is becoming aware of the places in our lives where we have no choice, where we get swept away by conditioning. And there's that famous quote, between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space lies a power to choose our response. And that really speaks to what we do in Buddhism. You know, we take what may feel like there is no space, and then we create a little bit of space, and it gets a little bit bigger, and we start to be able to respond differently. And we can say that that space is awareness itself. And as we become more acclimated to that, we realize that our minds, the conditioned mind that normally is in the driver's seat at times, is not. You know, we start to have some choice. And hopefully, those choices are guided by ethics, non-harming, compassion, That's really, of course, the direction that we move in Buddhism. And of course, some situations are easier than others. You know, even people on the path for decades have areas where they can exercise right intention, right action, right view. And maybe there's a few areas where it's still under the influence of the three poisons, greed, ignorance, and delusions. And to have a perfectly clear mind all the time is rarely possible. And that's okay. That's part of being human. And it's just a matter of consciously meeting that. You know, I think about something that happened to me. This was January 1st of 2024. And I think it's interesting, since Philip Moffitt was the founder of this Sangha, so you might find this kind of interesting. But I woke up on January 1st, and you know, sometimes we might feel that a new year, clean slate, you know, you kind of go into that fresh, you know, that open slate, you know, and maybe we have some time and some choice, some space to perhaps choose a little bit different. But what happened was, when I opened up my email that morning, there was a very odd email in my inbox. And on the subject line, it said, "Philip Moffitt is your master." And so as I went down into the email, it was very bizarre. It was somebody who had attended a retreat that I led back in 2017. And so here, you know, 7 years later, this person decides to write me, decides to, you know, and had all these weird details about this retreat and had all this weird commentary. And I thought, this is just bizarre. You know, it was clearly they had made up a name, made up an email. You know, they didn't really want their identity to be discovered, but it was just so bizarre. And so I thought, I'm not going to be reactive. You know, I'm just going to be kind. And I wrote back and I said, "What is it that you need from me? Is there something that you need?" You know, it was, well, that didn't penetrate anything. So the guy comes back with more weird stuff. And then Philip comes into the picture and he starts talking about how Philip is a Hindu and that if you go with Philip, he will have you for three lifetimes. And just a lot of weird stuff was coming out. And, you know, there's a part of me that thought it was funny. And another part of me is like, it felt really creepy. You know, there was something really odd about it. And it really affected my day. You know, there was just something that I couldn't just brush aside, you know, and I kept thinking, well, where did this come from? And why did he bring up Philip? And I thought, you know, I did during COVID, my husband and I did several Nine Bodies retreats online with Philip. This person obviously had been there on these retreats. But when he responded to me, he said he had escaped from the dark arts of Buddhism and of Philip, and that was all done for him. And so I knew this guy had issues. But I felt in those moments, you know, it really affected me for a few days. You know, it was like, it wasn't simply being able to say, this person's crazy, you know, no big deal, don't be bothered. It did bother me. It just had an impact. Now, I'm talking about it now with a smile. Obviously, I got over it. But it wasn't like there was just this incredible equanimity and ease right at first. You know, it almost felt like I was being stalked. So it was a little creepy, you know. And so there's some conditioning came up, you know, around this, of times in the past where maybe somebody stalked me or somebody was creepy with me, you know. And so it was that conditioning where I didn't have a perfectly clear mind. It wasn't bad. I wasn't overly reactive with him, but there was a residue. There was a residue of a response that stayed with me for a bit. And so, you know, sometimes this is where we look, you know, where something arises, especially something like this that was totally out of the blue. And there were moments of needing to reconnect, you know, to come back to something. And like I said, I got over it, of course. But things like that arise in our lives. You know, even if we've been practicing for decades, as everybody knows, there's still those places that hook us, right? We still have those hooks. And I wanted to talk about this aspect of choice. And I want to give a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. And he's explaining it through store consciousness. Our consciousness includes both individual, collective, and subjective, and objective consciousness. Yet we continue to believe that consciousness is one thing, and that there is an outer objective reality apart from consciousness. We want to be directly in touch with the reality of the world, yet the objective reality we think exists independently of our senses, perceptions, is itself a creation of collective consciousness. What is considered fashionable, for example, is a creation of the collective consciousness of a society. You believe that you have your own notion of beauty, but if you look deeply, you will see that it has been formed from the notions of many other people. When you shop for a shirt, for example, you think it is you who chooses the shirt, but the moment you see the shirt that aligns with the seeds in your store consciousness, that shirt chooses you. You think you have exercised your freedom of choice, but the choice was already made a long time ago. So very interesting to reflect on this. How much choice do we have over our decisions, over our likes and our dislikes? How much is built in through the culture? And what does this mean for our practice? In Buddhism, we do our best to cultivate beneficial states, right, for ourselves and others. And so that's a choice. There's an element of choice. And yet it's interesting to look at how good and positive habits are often harder to form and maintain than the bad ones, or the ones that kind of continue to run. You know, there's the dopamine hit, the immediacy, the instant gratification, whereas good habits are often delayed gratification or take more effort to cultivate them. Meditation, we have to show up. We have to continuously make that commitment. And exercise, same thing. You know, we have to make a commitment. Loving kindness and compassion. You know, when we have loving kindness, we cultivate loving kindness, and we see those places where the loving kindness and compassion are not so readily accessible. And so we cultivate. So much of Buddhism is a path of cultivation. And sometimes we may even feel inconvenienced by doing some of these things. And I think I gave a talk here maybe last time or the time before about the Dharma of inconvenience, which can be a form of suffering. And, you know, often we don't feel as inconvenienced initially by the easy hits of substances or electronics or shows on TV. And then they become habits and they become forms of avoidance and forms of avoidance of what is actually here. And it can be true for our psychological habits as well. You know, anger, the need for control, self-referencing, negative thinking, craving. You know, we can look at tanha, you know, which is craving in Buddhism, and then chanda, which has an element that's wholesome craving. But even with that, we're not all the way free. We're trading one type of karma for another, and the idea in practice is to ultimately extinguish karma, but we work with the intention to change our karma, and that's really an important aspect of what we do. And so somebody gave a question to the Buddha, and I'll just give you the question and then I'll read his response. Is a person, a self, responsible for one's own happiness or unhappiness? The Buddha said, I would not say it that way. And the next question is, are others responsible for their own happiness or unhappiness? The Buddha said, no, I would not say it that way. So the next question, so is it that both the self and others are responsible for one's happiness or unhappiness? And the Buddha said, no, I would not say it that way. So is it that neither self nor others are responsible for their own happiness or unhappiness? And again, the Buddha said, no, I would not say it that way. And so the questioner asked, so how would you say it? And the Buddha then said, in order to understand the causes and conditions for happiness and unhappiness, you have to understand that there is a cause and effect relationship that does not have a single point of beginning or a single point of responsibility. And this comes back to Thich Nhat Hanh's quote about consciousness being both internal and external and how we're influenced by it. Our family history being one of the most profound. You know, I used to think when I was growing up and just begun to discover the path that I chose my family out of past karma. You know, I was born into a very difficult situation. And in my mind, I described it, and I looked at it through the lens of choice and karma, that I had some important lesson to learn. And so somehow I chose this life. But that was just an explanation. It really didn't, it didn't satisfy my heart. You know, it didn't do anything. And I looked at it as being something that I was personally responsible for. And so there was a lot of suffering around that. Like, everything happened for a reason that was somehow my fault or to my credit. And so the I and mine, in a sense, was front and center. And so the family that I was born into, the efforts I made to overcome trauma or find some success in life. But I, when I look at it more closely, I see that many conditions were at play, and that by holding the idea that karma in birth was the whole answer, then it was literally my fault. It didn't help me, and it didn't help resolve the suffering in my heart. And the only thing that helped me was moving into the realm of compassion and self-compassion, and listening to my grief was what helped me. My explanations didn't do anything to undo the karma of suffering that I was born into. And so that was shifting. That was something where I shifted into a presence. And by shifting into in a mode of compassion and listening, then I was able to begin to change what that element of karma that had continued to follow me and create so much suffering in my life. So just a story and an explanation did nothing. But when I shifted it and I took the I and mine out of it, took the fault of self out of it, and was isolating it to this one single thing, then I began to find freedom. Recognizing that so much of what we experience in life, these multiple causes and conditions, are not just ours to hold. They happen through many, many pieces of the way in which our lives unfold. And to understand that is to come to a greater sense of freedom. And we look at the teachings of dependent origination, we're also looking at it through that lens of everything arising based on multiple causes and conditions. And so when we hold the lens of I and mine, then we're missing all of the conditions that happen. And so for me, you know, with the transmission, we could say what was transmitted to me through to my parent, from my parents, and we're all transmitted. You know, our parents transmit themselves to us. And this is something Thich Nhat Hanh talks about as well. And then what is our relationship to that transmission? And how do we begin to hold that in a way that recognizes that through presence, through meeting that with compassion and awareness, we can begin to undo the what has been carried down generationally. And that's something that I did through this understanding. And that was something that was so much more helpful than just blaming me or saying this was something that I was born into, or blaming them, or just saying it's you or it's me, you know, but holding it in this, we could call it this greater awareness and this consciousness that includes everything, then something was able to shift. And so Thich Nhat Hanh was talking about how the inner and outer are not truly separate, and we can't look at karma, as I said, in an isolated way. And I wanted to offer this quote from Gil Fronsdal. So to say that the self and only the self is responsible is to put it on a singular point of responsibility that denies the field of cause and effect that comes into play. The same applies if you blame someone else. The Buddha did not want to say it this way or that way, but rather he pointed to the causes and conditions that bring about happiness and unhappiness. The teachings of karma are part of this quest, this effort to look at the causal relationships that bring about happiness and freedom, freedom from suffering, and to look at those which cause suffering. So the Buddha essentially said, don't blame others and don't blame yourself. And so this is perhaps where we can actually begin to exercise more choice. Little by little, there's a way. But we have to know and see the obstacles and as well as the support along the way. I think of that as compassionate awareness. You know, when we can understand the greater kind of field of karma, of cause and effect, and of consciousness, I think it really gives us more room, more choice. Because if we see it all just through the lens of this is it, this is me, this is mine, this is them, this is the other, then we're stuck. You know, we can look at it through this bigger lens and find more response, even in just the daily way that we go through our lives, this sankhara, the suffering of everyday life, and our response to it. And it's so easy during the difficulty of a day or a circumstance to say, this was my fault. Or even the man who wrote to me and who, you know, sent that bizarre email about that retreat, you know, and what happened and what really stuck for me for a few days is, what did I do wrong? What did I do that maybe was unskillful at that retreat that had this effect? Even though intellectually I totally understood that this person seemed to have some mental illness, it wasn't really about me, but yet there was something that came together when he wrote me, and I had to open my lens of awareness to bring compassion to the situation, bring compassion to me, bring compassion to him, and then find the humor in his commentary around Philip and the kind of things he said. And I remembered the last email he sent to me had softened a little bit, and he said something about, well, you know, you don't have to really be entangled with Philip forever. All you have to do is set your boundaries and say no. And I thought, I wasn't entangled to begin with. You know, it was just, there was something both sad and comical about the situation. And so I could bring some compassionate awareness into that situation and just say, this was the arising. Some arisings may not feel like they should be happening, and yet they happen. And that's part of how we work with this arising, with karma, is that much of what happens is totally outside of our control. But hopefully, you know, through the path, through the practice, we do cultivate our ability to respond differently, right? We do cultivate, and more we can wake up to that and recognize that while we can't control everything, we can certainly meet these arisings in a more skillful way, a more compassionate way, a more awake way. And so, you know, we could ask ourselves, what support are we grateful for? What do we recognize as important? What feels like an impediment, internal or external? And how do we come back to right intention, compassion, and the skillfulness that refreshes what matters to us and keeps us practicing along the way? Because I do believe as we practice, we do begin to diminish some of that karma that leads us into these floods of reactive responses. And of course, that's what the Buddha wanted for us. And he wanted us to see this in a much more holistic way. So I will close the talk there. And I will open it for any comments or questions, anything y'all would like to share or talk about. I'll just open it up. Isabel.
I was just going to say one thing that I remembered from, I forget which sutra it is, but that the Buddha said not to try to understand dependent origination, because if you did, or not to understand karma, try to understand karma, because it'll just make you crazy. And I just loved your talk, because I think trying to disentangle what is my responsibility and what other people's responsibility is for my happiness is crazy making too. And it was just such a brilliant talk, really. I think that that knowing, you know, there's no sorting it all out. The other comment I was going to make is just that I once heard, we don't have control over anything. And you kind of alluded to that, like going shopping and having, you know, you think you're have the mentality to choose your own thing, but really you are choosing what's fashionable and what, on some level, you've been conditioned to choose, which is so true, but that doesn't really make it any less special to go shopping or less enjoyable to choose things that match or to enjoy decorating or any of the creative things. It just that understanding doesn't really change the joy of any of that. So I just thought it was a great talk, and just that I don't think we have control over anything. And once you just let go of that thought, a lot of things become much easier. And when you realize that you aren't responsible for your family or the failings that you feel like were thrown at you, then it makes it so much easier as well, you know? And so I agree with everything you said, and yet it doesn't change anything in the end, right?
Well, thanks, and I appreciate your commentary that it doesn't necessarily take away from the joy. Even if we're conditioned by our choices, doesn't mean that we just like the cuisine that we enjoy. We have cultural, there's so many things that you're right, that doesn't take away from the joy. It's just interesting to recognize this kind of deeper truth about conditioning and consciousness. So thanks for that. And Liz.
Hi there. Great talk. Very important. And kind of laughable because Philip's very big on making choices. I quoted him the other day to Donald when I was talking to him. Well, this is a developmental path,
Yes.
which very few p teachers mention. And I always bring it up. My ability to choose well when I was 21 is extremely different from my ability to choose at 86. Because I've been looking at my conditioning through 65 years of therapy and 30 years of Dharma. And of course, I still am highly conditioned, and it's part of the scene. You do the best you can, and over the years, you gain more wisdom, hopefully. And one does gain wisdom and see, for instance, I've forgotten the word that I wanted to use, unfortunately. I can let go of things in a way that I couldn't have in the past. Letting go of things I wanted or letting go of the things. Renunciation, that's the word I was looking for. I have a much stronger ability to practice renunciation for the better of myself and others. I will never be perfect. And also forgiveness. We need some self-forgiveness here, self-compassion, which you mentioned. We will never see everything clearly, but as we grow in age and practice, we have more ability to make good choices, I believe, and I hope so. And we are responsible for our choices, even though it's tough and we are in condition. I feel I'm responsible for my choices, even though as much I can't see. But like Wes Nisker said, you are not your fault, but you are your responsibility. So I will practice to the best of my ability. Thank you.
Thanks, Liz. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think this path ultimately leads us to that cultivation, and that's the beauty of it. And yet there's still times when we're swept away in the waves, and that's just part of, I think, part of the process. And I think it's important to recognize that those two flow together. So let's see, who's is Barbara? Are you, I think you're maybe next.
Unless Zoe is, I can go. I really enjoyed your talk. I think it's this question of responsibility and choice is really important. I like to see it in terms of interconnection, in that one of the things that happens, when you say, what support do we have to diminish our karma and our reactivity? I think we condition each other. And when we do that, we present possibilities to each other that we might not have had. And once we have those new possibilities, as Philip says, the felt sense of response of a possibility, then you really know that you can choose it and it's real for you. And that gives you more freedom. Because you don't you can have all kinds of abstract possibilities, but if you don't really have the felt sense, and you get that felt sense from friends and authors and wise people and people on the street and everyone, I mean, everyone in these boxes have conditioned me at one time or another, so, or almost everyone. So that's how I see it in a positive context too, that this is part of what our inner being is.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that about possibility. And I think too, it's like the understand to me, that speaks to like how you said we kind of create possibility for each other through the interconnection. And that's really the understanding that consciousness doesn't begin and end just with I or with you, but that it's shared. And especially when we cultivate wholesome connections. And to me, I think of Sangha as one of the really powerful places where we can really condition each other in a positive way because we're on the path together. And so that interconnected support is what allows us, I think, a big piece of what allows us to grow. I've always say Sangha is so essential for awakening on the path because it's not only an inside job, it's not out there, it's something we do together. So thank you for that. Yeah. Okay, let's see.
Zoe.
Oh, Zoe, yeah.
This talk is so amazing to me because I was having a very similar conversation with someone earlier in the day, on the same themes, and a lot of what's been said already, but just to maybe expound a little more, when you think about your conditioning that goes all the way back in this incarnation to your family of origin and the causes and conditions that set you up, a lot of that also includes ancestral karma and what comes through many generations that has an impact, that brought through our parents to us that has a big impact on our life. But, I think the job that we the task at hand is really to overcome and not just, our own conditioning, but sort of the ancestral conditioning so that we, and the one of the biggest vehicles for that is through meditation, I think, so that because otherwise it would be very difficult. The shame and the blame and the, who's at fault and who's, what caused who caused what and how, that we bring with us into many situations, I think is more easily overcome through the meditation and through the Dharma, and as Barbara said, by being together and through connection to others, which really is the healing space.
Thank you. And Mary?
Yes, thank you. So, Dharma friends are so important in Sangha. And one of the things I was just thinking about is I'm in a book group, but I know there's several people here who are different book groups or whatever kind of groups they have with other people. And we read with somebody, and I get a chance that we're reading this book right now, Dancing with Life, about the Four Noble Truths. And it's an opportunity to read the Dharma and talk about how it plays out in our daily life. I mean, this is really, really helpful. And it's one of those things where we don't get to choose our family. We don't get to choose a lot of the other things, but we get to, we get to choose our Dharma friends. And it's really, really beneficial to have someone that you can talk to about your practice and about the reading the suttas and about the studies. And I think that this is a really lovely thing if you can have it. And I know that Isabel has been thinking about and talking about, people. I'm in a book group, and you can only have so many people in the book group, but she's been willing to, foster and help people set up, groups together. And I think that this is a really, really wonderful place to help you. I don't know, for me, it helps with wise view. It helps with an opportunity to have my heart be open. It helps with all those conversations that we might have within our heads. And then sometimes if I can say them out loud, to someone else that I know that's going to, is a practitioner as well, and is going to listen to me with an open heart. This is really, really beneficial. And if anyone here in this group would like something like that, then I would really suggest, you know, contacting Isabel. You can put your, I don't know if you can put your email, or you can even go to the email on our website, inform, and it can be forwarded to her. And this is a really lovely way to make those kinds of connections. I mean, I think that, you know, the Buddha said, you know, Sangha is just like, yeah, it's the huge part of the practice. It's all the practice. And so this is very, very helpful. And because we look at things without blame, without shame, and just trying to have some kind of clarity of vision. So this is, you know, I think this is really important because it's very healing. Very healing. So that's my 2 cents. Thank you, Isabel. Hopefully some people will be contacting you.
I hope so too, Mary. It definitely reinforces everything, and it's such a safe place, and the world can be so screwed up, but we have safe place here.